Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be talking Saints and Sinners with singer-songwriter Matt Marr. Specifically, we'll be talking about the holy people that inspired his latest album titled Saints and Sinners, along with the challenges we all face in our journey to grow closer to God. After that, we'll feature a reflection from Father Jonathan Morris about the decision to live your life for God. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Matt Marr. Since his major label debut in 2008, Matt has become one of the most in-demand songwriters in the Christian music industry, as well as a popular performer himself with hit songs like Your Grace is Enough and Lord, I Need You. In 2013, he performed at World Youth Day for Pope Francis and 3 million people, and he's always traveling to share his music and faith with audiences around the country. Matt's latest album is entitled Saints and Sinners, and we're going to talk about the inspiration behind it today. But before we do, here's a clip from Saints and Sinners. This is Matt Marr with A Future Not My Own.
God slow me down. I'm like a river running, pressed to the ground. I feel it overcoming. I'm on my knees. I'm incomplete.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. We just heard a clip of the song A Future Not My Own from Matt Marr's album Saints and Sinners. I'm happy to have Matt Marr with me on the show right now. Matt, thanks so much for calling in today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Now, let me start with this album title, Saints and Sinners, because one of the image problems I think the saints have is that they often get whitewashed. People forget they were once sinners just like you and me. Was that a topic you wanted to explore through music on this album?
Absolutely. I think it's a big part of the crisis that a lot of people have had in their relationship with being part of the church and their relationship with the church, mm-hmm. that we've experienced really over the past, 10, 15, 20 years in, Western Christianity, in some ways, not just Catholicism, Christianity in general, but I think also a lot of Catholics, Credo-Catholics' relationship with the church, it's this thing of they grew up with a very, like you said, whitewashed sense of who the saints were, and it got projected in some ways onto the world around them. And when people can't live up to that expectation all the time, people get disillusioned, mm-hmm. in their faith. And they really don't know how to walk through that in a way. And but when you really examine and look at the lives of the saints and the inner work in some ways that went along with their sanctification, this is some of the stuff that they themselves struggled with. Even looking at the hypocrisy within themselves, but then also at the world around them.
Yeah.
And having to walk through that and really reach a point again of faith and belief in the resurrection of Christ and an ability to see people around them, not for their, weaknesses and failures, but to see them truly, as a child of God made in the image and likeness of God.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed your friend Audrey Assad a few times, and she said a lot of times when she's writing songs, they struggle with issues that she's going through herself. Is this an issue you were going through yourself, kind of finding that balance between saints and sinners?
I think everybody goes through different valleys of disillusionment. Mm-hmm. And I think my disillusionment was walking through, I lived in Phoenix for 18 years, and that was where I had a conversion and came back to my faith and came back to the sacramental life of the church and got involved in youth ministry and was working at working at different parishes. And really, Phoenix, in some ways, was like a new birthplace. Obviously, the fact that I'm from Newfoundland, Canada, is a huge point of pride. And I miss that part of my childhood, and the friendships that were made there, and I love getting to go back. And but Phoenix is really where the boy became a man in a way.
Okay.
And so when my wife and I moved to Nashville, we left 18 years of relationships and community and ministry and memories, and sometimes you have to start over. And I think there was this definite, you know, we've got great friendships in Nashville. You know, there's the diocese is doing amazing things there, but it's a slow. You can't change. You can't rebuild 18 years of life overnight.
Yeah.
And I think in that space, a lot of people could really, really, you know, start to have a crisis of faith. And I don't think for me, I've yet to kind of have that kind of a crisis. But I think for me, it was definitely more of a thing of just asking, what kind of life are we building? And what kind of life am I building here? And in some ways, grieving the loss of all that, which is a hard thing to do. And I think also just not having a clear sense of what the future held, you know, and we had bought a house. We moved to Nashville in 2012. We bought a house in 2013. There was a secondary building behind the main house that I started renovating and turning into a writing studio, and would kind of walk back there every day and just kind of walk around with my guitar and hum and sing and just not have a clear sense of the future. I've always been a person that for whatever reason, always had a sense of where things were headed in my own life. And for the first time, it was like just staring out into a void.
Yeah.
And the question sort of is, it's like, how do you remain consistent in your walk with Christ and deal with that? And I think at the same time that all that was happening, which is more so the personal life aspect, I just continually watch things unfold on a national level, whether it's issues like, you know, the issue of racial equality in the United States and you know, are there wounds there that have not been fully healed?
Mm-hmm.
And looking at social issues, looking at the sanctity of, you know, the unborn, looking at the sanctity of marriage, you know, how does the church continue to navigate a world that is going through so many political changes? Looking at how much politics has really poisoned, in some ways, people's day-to-day life, particularly on the internet. And kind of asking myself, you know, what do you think? How do you want to deal with this? And it was really this thing of looking to the saints and looking at these figures who somehow found a way to stand for God, to stand for the church, but also to love tremendously and love fiercely. And in doing that, they elevated the conversation. And that's what I feel like needs to happen. In the church is we need a lot of young men and women to respond to the call of God, not get bogged down in a lot of the arguments that are happening, focus their eyes back on Jesus and be amazing examples that can help re-elevate the conversation. I think that's what the point of this, that's why we have saints.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They elevate the conversation and they reorient people's eyes back towards God.
Right, right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Matt Maher about his album Saints and Sinners. And I think your answer pretty much harkens to that song we heard at the top of the show, A Future Not My Own. You just said it was the first time you didn't have your future fully planned out. So what was it about that song? Because I know it was inspired, I think, by a quote from martyred Salvadoran Archbishop Oscar Romero. What resonated with you about that?
Well, So it's called the Romero Prayer, and it's on the USCCB website. And, you know, I kind of find myself being like a pack rat of prayers. As a songwriter, I'm always, as I'm just walking through life, I'll hear a quote from a poet or, you know, maybe a saint or maybe a writer or, you know, a philosopher. And I'll think to myself, that would make an amazing song. And so for years, I had heard this prayer. It was actually written by Bishop Kent Utner from Saginaw, Michigan.
Oh, okay.
But it was written on a day that was it was sort of a memorial of the anniversary of his death, of his martyrdom. And so it was very much written in the spirit of Archbishop Romero and his sort of heart for ministry and his heart for building the kingdom. And, you know, I remember in 2005 going to Cologne. I was in Cologne the week before World Youth Day, and I didn't actually stay for World Youth Day. I was there a week before doing a ministry training event with an organization called Life Team, and I got to go to the cathedral in Cologne. And it took like 676 years or some number like that, some amazing amount of time to build. And I found myself just touching the stones on the outside of it, thinking to myself, the guys who laid this foundation never saw the tops of the spires being finished. They were willing to basically spend their whole life investing in something that they did not see the fruits of. And it really, for me, became this reminder of that's what ministry really is about. Ministry is about sowing into a future that doesn't belong to you. It's, and I think so much of the world we live in now is basically based on immediate returns. If you make an investment in anything, whether it's friends, whether it's economic or whether it's emotional or even spiritual now, we want an immediate sense of gratification. And that's not characteristic of the gospel. The gospel is, you know, Jesus is, if anybody wants to find their life, they have to lose it. And I think that's what he's saying is that we need, even in America, you know, it's the best thing. You go to East Coast, you know, I was just in New York a couple of weeks ago, and St. Patrick's Cathedral is a testimony to this, that there are generations of men who, like, built this amazing structure so that it would stand as a testimony and serve the faith of us, you know, hundreds of years later. And the end of this prayer says we are prophets of a future not our own. And so I found myself going, man, what would somebody pray after they read this prayer? And so that's where the song "A Future Not My Own" came from. It was the what's the prayer that somebody prays after reading this speech? You know what I mean?
After
these thoughts,
right.
And it is a very personal thing. You know, I live a very busy, I live a very very full life, and I try and pray every day that it's not busy, but there's a difference between a full life and a busy life. But there is, you know, the opening line of the song is God slow me down. And it really was, you know, written at a time where that really was my prayer. It was really this, just the simple sense of God, I feel like my mind's racing in a million different directions and a million different uncertainties. And, I don't know what the future is, but I do know that I don't want it to be the one that I construct. I want it to be the one that you construct. And so I found a lot of solace in that prayer of Romero. And and that's where the song came from.
Good. I'm talking to Matt Marr. His album is Saints and Sinners. Website is mattmarrmusic.com. I want to touch on one of the other themes on the album, which is darkness and light. And I really like the song Firelight, which was inspired by Mother Teresa's struggles with darkness. And one of the reasons it stood out to me is I think sometimes Christians have a problem admitting that we do face spiritual and emotional darkness. We think we have to put on a happy face. So what were you trying to convey with that song?
You know, it really floored me when I remember when I think it was ABC News years ago did this whole special on the book Come Be My Light, and it was this big scandal. It was treated as this big scandal that Mother Teresa struggled, you know, with her faith. And I always just sort of laughed because I'm like, well, what did you expect? I mean, any human being that, first of all, takes on vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, that's a tremendous witness and sacrifice. Just that. Then decides to start their own order, which that alone is another huge act of sacrifice. But then wants that order to basically live and work in a living representation of death on the planet. I mean, people, everyone says, everyone that I mean, I do a lot of, you know, I'm obviously torn with a lot of artists. A lot of artists do a lot of work with a couple of different relief organizations. Obviously, Compassion International is probably the biggest one. And they, and everyone says, if you go to India, just you'll not come back the same person. It will fundamentally change who you are. And yet this woman, this brave woman who's, you know, I don't know, like 4.5 foot nothing, and, you know, 98 pounds or something soaking wet. She, with just such tremendous courage, goes to the poorest place on the planet and literally just goes to help people die with dignity, of course you're going to struggle. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know anybody that wouldn't become disillusioned and would struggle with finding the presence of God. And that's the great challenge. You know, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, that his big call right now is it isn't just go serve the poor because you should feel bad that you have stuff and they don't. Mm-hmm. That's not what it means. It's about going to find the face of Jesus in the midst of the poor and go, oh my goodness, this is where God actually more profoundly is.
Yeah.
And, but that struggle that she had, to me, I feel like we could do a whole ad campaign for vocations around it and
yeah.
say that this is who God's looking for. God's looking for people who don't have all the answers. God's looking for people who are willing to admit their own frailty. And the quote was this letter she'd written to her spiritual director. And obviously, you know, some people say that she didn't want people to read those letters because she felt like they would have been scandalized by them.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, like, I think that's just, I think that sometimes we're afraid of people seeing fully who we are.
Yeah.
But God uses all of it for his glory. And, she said, if I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness. I will be continually absent from heaven to light the path of those who still walk on the earth. And it's such a powerful quote in the sense of basically somebody saying, I'm not content. And it's not necessarily about the theology of it. You know what I mean? It's because it's not like up in heaven, you're going to be dissatisfied with being in heaven.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
yeah.
but it was her and her humanity saying, I can't bear the thought of me basking up in the glory of heaven when there are still people who are stumbling around in the darkness. And
mm-hmm.
And that's a very admirable quote, you know? So, the back half of the song, it really is in some ways me, aligning myself with that and saying, you know, it's like, look, if I'm recognized or known for anything in this world, please let it be that I was willing to run to the darkest corners of the earth and shine the light of Jesus.
Yeah.
And not that I just laid back in my own comfort.
Yeah. I'm talking to Matt Maher about his album, Saints and Sinners. I know you've got to run. I just got one more quick question about the other saintly Teresa on the album, Therese of Lisieux. You have a song called Everything is Grace. And she was one of my favorites because there's a profound simplicity in her observations on God and life. And in a way, she struggled with her own darkness, even though her image is that of being a little bit flowery and schmaltzy. Why did that idea that everything is grace resonate with you?
Well, I mean, she said this quote, too, towards the end of her life. She had tuberculosis. She lost both parents. She joined a convent at the age of 15 years old, and she did nothing significant with her life. And from a worldly perspective, you know, and when you look at ministry in the world of professional ministry, lay people struggle with this idea of, am I accomplishing something with my life? You know, if somebody writes a book and nobody buys the book,
mm-hmm.
you feel like you're a failure, but maybe the point wasn't for you to sell. Maybe the point wasn't how many people buy the book. Maybe the point was just to write it. And so even for me making a CD, maybe the point of me making the album for my own sanctification is just making the album. There's no guarantee that people are supposed to buy it. And so I think with Therese, her little way basically says, like, God, free up my heart to do these little insignificant things with a massive sense of significance.
Yeah.
And she was so abandoned to this that even at the end of her life, as she's dying, not a comfortable death, she's able to say that everything is a direct result of the Father's providential love for us. All the inconveniences, all, you know, and that we live in a world, in a first world of basically inconveniences, you know, like, I mean, the enemy has taken most of the church and turned them from prophets into just honestly a bunch of complainers, myself included.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend more time complaining about life than really prophesying the love and grace of God over it. And it's an interesting thing when we silence all our prophets and turn them into complainers, you know, because it mutes the voice I think, of God in a way in the world that really needs to hear it. So Teresa's, to me, was such a profound example for young people who feel tempted to complain and struggle of an insignificant life, because she found great significance. And to reach a point of surrender, to say the storms, the highs and lows, you know, my parents are getting a divorce, or my best friend struggling with an eating disorder, or I'm walking through these things my own, and, you know, so-and-so's aunt or uncle has cancer, and I'm dealing with depression. I'm dealing with, like, all of these things, which are horrible and horrific. They don't have to, they don't always have to result in us being absent from God. And in fact, a lot of those valleys that we walk through, those places can become very profound places of transformation, where we're actually brought closer to God, and we reach a point of surrender, of saying, you know, everything is grace. Yeah. There's an opportunity in everything to receive grace for the journey, and to receive grace for life, and to receive grace to love people, no matter how difficult things may seem.
Right. I'm Tony Ross. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking to Matt Maher about his album Saints and Sinners. His website is mattmahrmusic.com. And as we heard on the show, there's a lot of profound ideas on this album, inspired by the saints, who are not the whitewashed figures we often think they are. They struggled with darkness and sin and everything, just like us. So pick up this album, Saints and Sinners. I think you'll be happy you did. The music is great. The lyrics are very profound and insightful. And Matt, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Tony. Peace.
I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'll be back in a couple of minutes with a reflection from Father Jonathan Morris. But first, to play us into a message from the Christophers, here is Matt Maher singing the song we talked about earlier, Firelight.
Dear Jesus, where are you tonight? I bear a sadness deep inside.
No one is too far gone for God. Regardless of how many poor choices you've made, God is still willing to welcome you back with open arms if you sincerely ask for His forgiveness and try to change your ways. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called From Sinners to Saints. It profiles several people who chose to turn their lives around after experiencing God's love and grace. To request your free copy of From Sinners to Saints, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and next up is a reflection from Father Jonathan Morris on the fundamental option for God. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, it has to do with making the decision that inspires you to say, I'm going to live my life for God and His will for me. So how do you get to that point, and what if you fall short? Well, here's Father Jonathan with some answers.
Let's talk about a fundamental option for God. Now, what is that? Well, fundamental option has to do with making a decision that my life is for God. That's who I am. That's what I'm going to do with my life. No matter what happens, I know one thing is for sure. I'm going to live for God and His will for me. I want to talk a little bit about how St. Peter, the first pope, lived this fundamental option for God. Do you remember when Jesus asked Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" It's in Matthew chapter 17. He says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And then Jesus replied to him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, because it was no human agency that revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven." We're talking here about the grace of God in Peter's life that allowed him to make a fundamental existential option for God. Now, we know that this happened because later on in Peter's life, even after he had already proclaimed his faith in Jesus, he ended up denying that same Lord that he believed in. He denied him three times at a moment in which Jesus was most in need. And yet, even though he did that, he came around. It's called repentance. You know, when we've made a fundamental option for God, and we've made it at the depth of our soul, and when we've received the grace of God in our lives to do that, that's called conversion. Well, no matter what happens, no matter what sin we commit, by the grace of God, we're going to be able to go back and say, you know what? That wasn't me. That wasn't me at my best. That's not who I am. I am a son of God. I'm a daughter of God. I have made a fundamental option for God. Maybe you've never heard of this in your parish or from the pulpit, but I just have seen so often that a person who has not yet made that choice, you know, who has not either accepted Jesus as their personal Lord and Savior, as the evangelicals often say, or done it in some other way, just made a deep down decision that this is who I am going to live for, that this is who I am, and then receive that special grace. Well, then tough times come and, you know, I don't have so much faith anymore. I'm not going to be able to get through this tough time and still hold on to my faith. Someone like Peter, who was a deep sinner, that's for sure, denying the Lord even as he was the first pope. Well, he loved God so much, so deep down. He had made that fundamental option that he was able to start again. And that's what you and I are called to do as Christians, as followers of Christ. And you know what? Maybe that's why Jesus trusted him. Not because he knew he was going to be perfect. No, but because he knew he would always come back to the core of who he was, because he had made a fundamental option for God.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.